I'm an associate editor with Drug Topics. Today, I'm joined by Mayank Amin, owner and chief patient advocate of Skipak Pharmacy. Back in 2018, when a large chain shut down Skipak Pharmacy, Mayank stepped in and reopened its doors to the community, leading the pharmacy through the challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic and earning the name Superman Pharmacist. Mayank has transformed Skipak into a thriving community hub. In this episode of Over the Counter, Mayank will be talking about his perspectives on community pharmacy, as well as how he got to where he is today. Welcome, and thanks so much for joining me.
Lauren, thanks so much for having me. It's a great pleasure to be here with you today.
Of course. So to open our discussion, can you tell us a little bit about your background, as well as your journey reviving Skipak Pharmacy?
Yeah, so a pharmacist by trade, but in general, someone who's very passionate about transforming things that I'm involved with. So ever since I was a child, I always wanted to do something that could make a big impact in the lives of those around me, and that I'd also have a lot of fun doing in the process, because I always believe that when you're doing something, if you're spending a lot of time behind it, if you're not having fun, what's the point of living? I was fortunate that my path in life kind of allowed me to do a lot of these cool things. While I can never say that the path that I dreamt about is where I'm at today, I believe that every step leads you to a different opportunity. And I've taken many steps since I've graduated from pharmacy school. And here I am now as a pharmacy owner at Skipak Pharmacy. My journey kind of began non-traditionally, as I had mentioned. I was on my last rotation to pharmacy school. I got a phone call from M. Night Shyamalan. He's a film producer in Philadelphia. His casting director had called me. Because they were looking for a stand-in double for one of the main actors, Dev Patel, who a lot of people know of from The Slumdog Millionaire. And I thought it was a spam call, because normally pharmacy students who are about to be pharmacists don't get these kind of calls, especially because I'd never actually applied or signed up or wanted to pursue that path. But once again, it was one of those cool things where I thought if it's an opportunity and it's actually real, I'll go show up at the auditions and see what it's about. And I did go, and it was kind of cool that I was about to graduate, and this opportunity would begin right after I became a pharmacist. And my supervisor at Walgreens, where I had a full-time opportunity lined up, was actually okay with me continuing to do this non-traditional path for a few months. And I accepted the role, and I was on a movie set for a few months, which I think was an actually mind-blowing experience, but it also taught me a lot about patience, about working together as a team. So many amazing things that I learned on the movie set, especially working with the director. And a lot of those things transformed into the pharmacy world and the pharmacy experience that I'm able to live and produce today. After that little role in the Avatar, The Last Airbender movie, continued the opportunity with Walgreens as a pharmacist. I loved the aspect of being out in the community. So while I was working as a pharmacist behind the door at the actual counter and in the pharmacy, I always told my supervisor, please let me know of any opportunities that Walgreens has where I can go out in the community and help underserved communities, vaccinate, bring Walgreens new business opportunities. If you have an opportunity, tell me about it and I'm ready to go. And at that time, Walgreens was acquiring Duane Reade in New York City. It was a big, huge deal at that time. There was hundreds of stores that they were acquiring. And at that time, my supervisor remembered me and he said, would you like to go to New York City for a couple of weeks and help transition pharmacists and their teams to the Walgreens system? And I said, for sure. That was also an awesome opportunity, because you got to learn about culture shift. One company where people have a set mindset, working day to day for many, many years, this chain was open. And now they're switching cultures and systems and a lot of different things to the Walgreens system. And I got to interact with people. And of course, you're in Manhattan, so there's no better place in the world than to be in the New York City. And I learned a lot while I was there. But that also kind of led me to other thoughts in my mind that, you know, this is kind of cool where there's other opportunities in pharmacy where you can be working with big teams, making companies or helping them with big transitions. And I also happened to glance at Pfizer while I was in New York City for my couple of weeks staying there with Walgreens. Pfizer's headquarters in New York City, and I was staying literally right across the street from the Pfizer headquarters. So in the back of my mind, the thought came to mind of, what if I started applying for jobs in pharma, just to experience something different? So it was about 5 or 6 years into my career at Walgreens where I started applying for jobs on LinkedIn. And for those students that think that you absolutely have to have a fellowship or a residency to get into pharma, I can say you're partially right, but you can make it happen even if you don't have residency or fellowship if you try hard enough. And that was me knocking on every single door I could. I used LinkedIn to the max. For those students that don't have a LinkedIn, though any student that comes to my pharmacy for rotations, I'm always telling them, make sure you have a LinkedIn. It's the best way to reach out to people and also for me to find a job opportunity. They have this thing on LinkedIn called LinkedIn Easy Apply, and I clicked on that button for literally every single opportunity that had the word pharmacy and a pharmaceutical company. And out of the 200 clicks that I clicked on, one happened to be Pfizer. And they had an urgent role that they were fulfilling. It was in pharmacovigilance. Drug safety is the normal name for that word. It would require me to move to New York City within 2 weeks. So a boy that was born and raised in Lansdale, it's like a farm town, now transitioning in 2 weeks, I would have to move to Manhattan for this role. And I did it. Moved into a friend's house or apartment because everything in Manhattan is pretty expensive. We're a block away from Times Square, literally living on his couch for the year. But it was once again a new opportunity. I was at Pfizer working on adverse event reporting for different products, including vaccines. Never did I think that down the road I would be supplying or administering hundreds of thousands of these vaccines. But while I was at Pfizer, I also did my best to network with people. One of the things that I learned from a mentor over there was you're at the headquarters. The CEO's here, there's executives here, there's people coming in and out. Key decision makers, and they might end up in the same elevator as you're going up and down the elevator. Don't lose any opportunity that you have to connect with them. Even though you're literally at the bottom of the totem pole and they're all the way at the top, don't let that stand in the way. And I remember those words, and I actually one day had emailed the CEO of Pfizer, and I actually got a response. I emailed a few of the executives. I didn't email them to ask them, like, hey, could I get a promotion or can I have a better job opportunity? I simply just wanted to learn about their success, how they manage, what they do with their families, their careers, what path they took. And it was amazing that a few of them actually responded back. To be in a company of a couple hundred thousand people and to get a response back from the highest folks was cool. And being there at the headquarters, I actually was able to visit some of them at their offices. And I built that connect with them at that point where I told them that I know I'm not asking for a job in another field at Pfizer. But if there's any opportunities for me to help with any projects at Pfizer that you're working on, I'll happily do it off of the clock. Just get me involved with something because I want to make a difference while I'm here at Pfizer. And there was a group called Pfizer's Innovation Team, Pfizer Innovation. And once a year, and this was during that time, they would fly in about 50 people from around the world, all the different Pfizer employees. 50 would get selected, and we'd come together for a conference called Pfizer X. When that conference came, I reached out to some of the executives I had reached out to before. And I was like, hey, is there any way you can get me into this conference? And I got in by literally asking. So it was one of those things where I was able to have breakfast with the CEO of Pfizer. And we had a scavenger. It was like a bar crawl in the city with the executives. And that experience kind of lit up my eyes and made me realize that no matter what you do in our profession or in your career, there are so many opportunities available. Even if you don't plan on it happening to you. And the connections you can make can actually help you down the road. Even if you don't, you never want to burn a bridge no matter what. Because who would have ever thought that my Walgreens supervisor, who was a regional supervisor, probably overseeing thousands of employees in our district, would actually come to my 5-year independent pharmacy anniversary party and speak at it? You would think it's competition. Walgreens down the street from me. And here's an independent pharmacy owner. Why would his supervisor still come? But this many years later, like 2 weeks ago, we had our 5-year anniversary for our independent pharmacy. And my supervisor from Walgreens was there to speak, to say how proud he was that we were helping patients in our community. And it's about networking, building bridges, and doing what you love. So I was there at Pfizer, but then I also realized that I enjoyed what I did, but I didn't want to take on additional leadership opportunities within pharmacovigilance. That wasn't the path that I saw. I wanted to do more of like outward facing, going out in the community, and that wasn't that role. So I still worked part-time at Walgreens during that time, but being in pharma, and at that time they allowed us to go to business school. Went back to get my MBA at Villanova while I was working for Pfizer, and Pfizer helped pay for it, which is fantastic. Well, at my time during Villanova School of Business, obviously things weren't specifically catered towards pharmacists or pharmacy professionals. You're just learning in general about business, marketing, networking, finance, accounting. But the thing I learned from business school is that there's opportunities in literally anything that you're passionate about. And there was a class that I was taking called Opportunity Recognition, and we had to come up with a startup idea, and we had to present the startup idea to our class. I came up with something completely different from what pharmacy is about. It was about event and wedding planning. So I was like, all right, let me open a wedding and an event planning company for the sake of this project. I will plan someone's wedding, and then I'll bring that back to the class and just present of what happened, what the experience was like. What I thought was just a class project turned into an actual wedding planning company, and I was able to plan over 100 weddings. Once again, it was a passion hobby. It didn't feel like work. Absolutely loved traveling the world, helping couples, including many of the pharmacy students that I went to school with. So it was kind of cool giving back and being able to help people with the best day of their life. So planned all these weddings, and then still working part-time at Walgreens. I was working at Pfizer doing these weddings on the weekends, and then I realized like I actually wanted to pursue this a little bit further and do event and wedding planning full time, because there comes a time in your life where you only have 40 hours that you want to work a week. I decided that I would pursue another opportunity on my own, just like a startup, and continue to do that full time. So I left my job at Pfizer to become a full time event and wedding planner while working part time at Walgreens. And I thought that was the direction I was headed in, which would have been fantastic. But I was working at Walgreens one day, and I walked out of the store and I saw a sign on the digital reader board outside which said, "Welcome, Skipack Pharmacy, patients." And that was a light bulb to me, because I never had been in an independent pharmacy before in my life. I didn't really even know too much about independent pharmacies. I honestly thought they were for seniors and people that needed customized care. And that's why I never stepped foot into one. But I was like, you know what? This pharmacy must have closed, and I'm assuming Walgreens probably bought them out. I asked my supervisor what happened. He informed me that it wasn't Walgreens that bought them out, but CVS down the street did. So now their patients, 50 years of patients, are floundering all over the place looking for a new home. I took nothing of it, but I was like, let me go drive by that pharmacy and just see what it looks like. And I happened to go by that pharmacy the next day. I was sitting in the parking lot watching a lot of these seniors just like pull up to the window, because there's not too much of an announcement happens when a pharmacy closes. One day it's there, the next day lights are out, phones are redirected to whatever pharmacy was purchased, and the patients are kind of left floundering. And that's exactly what had happened here, is patients were coming to the door trying to open it up. There was red signs in the window that said your prescriptions have been transferred up the street to CVS, who had purchased their files. And I took nothing of it, but I saw that there were seniors absolutely destroyed by this. Like, it was almost like I was watching a funeral happen. Something so meaningful to these patients, something that they were so passionate about. Some of these people might have come to this pharmacy on their horse 50 years ago, and here they were sitting in a parking lot, just like all looking and talking, saying, "What actually happened here? How do we lose something that means so much to us?" And I happened to be born and raised in that town, like 5 miles away from this pharmacy. So I was like, maybe I could start up something here and create a different experience. And that's what I did. I reached out to a few of the providers that I knew, because I knew a lot of people in the town, and I asked them, "Do you think it would be wise for me to reopen this pharmacy? I know it would require a lot of work because CVS has already bought all the files. I would start with zero patients. I'd have to bring everybody back in. So the thing I love doing, marketing, I'd have to market the heck out of this place and find a unique way to bring people back. But I didn't just want to bring people back into the pharmacy. I wanted them to have an experience like they've never had before in pharmacy. So it's one thing just to open a pharmacy and have people come to pick up prescriptions, but why not transform the way that people view a pharmacy and change the way that they actually think that, instead of just coming in to pick up prescription, they could be coming in and actually, even if they feel terrible on the way in, they would feel great on the way out. Motivate them, do whatever possible. And that's kind of what happened, is that we reopened this pharmacy from ground zero. I ended up hiring some of the original employees of the pharmacy. So some of the ladies that had been working there the 50 years, who are mostly all 75 plus years old at that time. I rented a billboard down the street from the pharmacy, and the billboard said, "The girls are back." And I had a picture of the three women who were the original employees of the pharmacy. And the town got very excited that the girls were back, the pharmacy's back, and it almost felt like a party in the town. I've never seen people have this much excitement towards a business, but we've had patients when we first opened roll down the aisles because it felt like their home was back. We had people asking me for yard signs. Now, I didn't even have a yard sign in my own yard that said Skipack Pharmacy is back, but these patients had these yard signs that I bought that said Skipack Pharmacy is back. They had bumper stickers that they asked me to get that said Skipack Pharmacy has my back. So you see cars roaming around town. It was like a huge reunion for everybody, and I was so excited. But then, as I started doing the business side of things, I was like, "This is great! It's like a party. Everyone's so happy." As I started running prescriptions, I started seeing red lines on the screen, and when I started seeing red lines don't usually mean positive things in any world. So when I started seeing the red, I was like, "This is not good because it looks like I'm losing money filling a lot of prescriptions." I didn't know you can actually lose money filling prescriptions. Here I was at Walgreens thinking that the more prescriptions you fill, the more money your pharmacy makes. And it was the complete opposite. I didn't ask too many pharmacy owners about any of these practices, about the difficulties they were facing. I didn't look at news stories, literally nothing. I just jumped in thinking that this is the best idea for me. And I'm actually glad that I did that because if I would have looked into this further, most people aren't opening pharmacies right now because they're scared of all of those things that they see that are negative, including the poor reimbursements. But I realized that, okay, as with anything in life, there's challenges that come up, but you have to find ways around it. And that's what I did, is that the things that we're losing money on, I realized that it's not okay just to have a business and keep losing money because, like what's happening today, one pharmacy is closing in this country every single day. That is not okay. And I don't want to be a number, that contributes to that increasing in our country of pharmacies closing down. So I put my creative thinking hat on and said, we're going to do whatever it takes to not fill those prescriptions where we lose money. Because it's like if you have a problem, you don't continue doing things that will add on to the problem. You have to plug it. And that's what we did. We tried to find ways where the prescriptions that we lose money on, we don't directly fill them at our pharmacy, or we'll try to see if we can get the patient set up for mail order. If they can pick that prescription up at CVS or Walgreens or somewhere else where that pharmacy might not lose money filling it. And yes, there is something called PBMs and spread pricing. I could lose $50 on that prescription at my pharmacy. Meanwhile, a chain pharmacy down the street who owns a PBM could be making $500 on that prescription. I started learning a lot more. It's like going back to elementary school and you're learning your ABCs, your numbers. I was learning about all this every single day about how all of the system works. And a lot of things that came to mind, I was like, how is this legal? Like, those questions came to my mind often, where how are people allowed to do this in America? My family's from India. There's things that I question about the legalities of when I'm over there. But I'm like, I know this happens in India, but how is it legal here in America where we have so many rules, so many systems of checks and balances? But what I've realized that things happen, and then once they do happen, if it grows, like how an insurance company and a pharmacy can own each other, how it can be vertically integrated, and how that same person is the one that's paying the independent pharmacy. So if you want to get that thorn out of your foot and you're a PBM or a chain pharmacy that owns a PBM, you just underpay that independent pharmacy. And eventually, if they bleed long enough, that independent pharmacy owner is going to be like, actually, I don't want to keep this place open because I can't survive just losing money every day. But once again, I didn't want to be a stat. So I said, I understand this is happening. I can't change it, but I'm going to make sure our voice, our community's voice is heard. So I'll reach out to all of our legislators. I'll do whatever is required. Sign me up for every organization. And I'm going to try to change the way that things are happening, at least in my pharmacy. While I was doing all this, COVID hits. First case of COVID in our county. And at that point, I was like, okay, you cannot lose money doing COVID supplies because you're not going to buy, a mask or a glove or sanitizers at a specific cost and then sell it at a loss. Yes, we donated literally hundreds of thousands of products, but when everybody else was sleeping, we were up and awake, driving to New York, driving to Maryland, driving hours away to find ways to make sure that our community had tests, masks, sanitizers, all the things that people were urgently needing, including toilet paper. We literally had an entire truck of toilet paper come to our pharmacy, and we were the supplier of toilet paper in our town for a while when that shortage happened. But it was finding those urgent needs of our community and being able to help them. That's what I realized that was the best part of what we can do is while we might not be the best place for you to fill your prescriptions every single day or to fill that brand name injectable or your brand name diabetes medication, we can fill gaps that others cannot. And that's what I ended up doing is that myself and my team and my community, we came together. At my grand opening, I mentioned to the community saying that one day, if I ever need your help, I'm going to ask you for it. I've opened this pharmacy for you guys. So if I ever ask for help, I hope you guys come back and help me. And that time came literally within a year and a half of me opening when it was COVID. And I was like, I can't do this myself. Like, if an entire truck comes to the store, I only have two employees and we have all this stuff that needs to happen, I need the community's help. So I started reaching out on Facebook saying, if anyone can come help me, we're getting sanitizer in. I need people to help me compound sanitizer in the back of our room if you're available. And people just started showing up in numbers. That's when the community also realized that this pharmacy wasn't Max Pharmacy. It was their own pharmacy all over again, like they've always experienced in the last 50 years. And that's what made me very excited and happy to continue to keep moving forward because there would be days that I'd walk into the pharmacy and somebody would have a vacuum in their hand, vacuuming in our store, and it was a patient. You don't ever see that happen in a business where you walk into a building and you see a customer cleaning the shelves or the aisle. Or bringing boxes off of a truck and putting them on your shelf. And that's when I realized that they were right. This is not Max Pharmacy. This is their pharmacy. I'm going to do whatever possible to make sure that our community is taken care of. And then time flew and it was time for the vaccines to come. And just like I did at Pfizer, never be afraid to reach out to whoever you know because your voice can be heard. And for me, it was all the people. I knew the vaccines were coming from the government. So for me to reach out to local stores, it made no sense. Me to reach out to our wholesaler didn't matter. They weren't going to supply those vaccines. There was one source, it was the government. So at that point, I reached out to everyone I knew in government, and I happened to be on a state chat. They were discussing the vaccine rollout in Pennsylvania, and I saw one of our state representatives on that chat. So I messaged him on the side. I was like, "Hey, rep, you know that we have the bandwidth to literally handle any kind of emergency, like as you've seen with all the other shortage crises that we've had." And how we've helped so many people in our community. If you get me vaccine somehow, you know we're gonna crush it in this town, and every vaccine is gonna get into arms as fast as possible. And we have an army of volunteers that are ready to help. And he said, "Mac, let me see what I can do." So there wasn't any back door that they reached out to. They simply gathered a few of the state representatives from our area, and they wrote a very nice letter to the Department of Health, just saying that they have someone in this town that's willing to make a difference. If it's possible to move our application up and to get us some vaccines, they can make it happen. And that's what actually happened. After we shook some trees through our representatives, the vaccines came flowing and we got our first 1,000 doses of Pfizer vaccine. And those 1,000 doses were administered in less than 8 hours. Imagine a store that has two employees. 8 hours, those 1,000 vaccines were administered. And our story became viral at that point. The story of Superman begins at that point where we got our COVID vaccines.